looked up at his disciples and said, "Blessed are you who are poor, for yours is the kingdom of God. Blessed are you who are hungry now, for you will be filled. Blessed are you who weep now, for you will laugh. Blessed are you when people hate you, and when they exclude you, revile you, and defame you on account of the Son of Man. Rejoice in that day and leap for joy, for surely your reward is great in heaven. For that is what their ancestors did to the prophets. But woe to you who are rich, for you have received your consolation. Woe to you who are full now, for you will be hungry. Woe to you who are laughing now, for you will mourn and weep. Woe to you when all speak well of you, for that is what their ancestors did to the false prophets. But I say to you that listen, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who abuse you. If anyone strikes you on the cheek, offer the other also. And from anyone who takes away your coat, do not withhold even your shirt. Give to everyone who begs from you, and if anyone takes away your goods, do not ask for them again. Do to others as you would have them do to you." The Gospel of the Lord. When I run on the treadmill at Planet Fitness, I like to position myself in front of two televisions so that I can watch at least two things at the same time. A couple of years ago in January, I was able to catch a Pittsburgh Steelers game and a Duke basketball game at the same time, and they both won. It was like the perfect outcome. I have a younger friend of mine, about 20 years younger, still single, that when he runs on the treadmill at Planet Fitness, he likes to watch the young women who are on the treadmills around him. Even sometimes he loses his balance and goes flying off the back of the treadmill. And what was even worse was the young woman that he was checking out didn't even bother to stop and see if he was okay. So a couple weeks ago, as I'm pondering the sermon, I'm at Planet Fitness and I'm on the treadmill and there are two televisions in front of me, and the one television is doing a series on these scary clown things. You know, these sightings of clowns that are made up to be terrifying in their appearance, and now their pictures are being taken in front of schools and other public institutions in order to terrify people. They're jumping out alongside the streets at night in order to scare people. And at the same time, on the other television is a series on the two candidates run for president of the United States. Now, what a good combination. Scary clowns, scary clowns. Now, clowns aren't always scary. In fact, I dated a clown one time. Now, she might have been scary to some because she was about 6'4". I'm not talking about my current wife. This is another clown that I dated. And she actually got me to go clowning with her. My clown name was Flubber. I had a red nose and a big bright wig. And we would go to different carnivals and that and do balloon animals. It was a great, great time. I always loved watching clowns and circuses and the fun things that they were to do. However, I'm aware that there are people who are also terrified of clowns and it's scary to them. But clowns can be these fun, wonderful, playful creatures that really cause us to laugh. I also have heard that those in the clown community are a little bit offended right now. They are offended because people have been calling Mr. Trump a clown, and they think that's a put-down to clowns. They've started their own movement. It's called Clown Lives Matter. so that we do appreciate the level of clowns. And as I punched into the search engine on my computer, scary clowns, and this is the truth. You know what video showed up first? An advertisement for Mrs. Clinton running for president. So maybe the two do belong together, scary clowns and candidates for president. But what I want you to think about coming together first is the possibility that clowns can be seen as fun and good, but clowns can also be seen as scary or terrifying. And I want you to consider the possibility. I want to propose the possibility to you that in our human minds, we can hold those opposite opinions in tension with each other at the same time. We can weigh both together in our minds. It's a sign of spiritual maturity to be able to hold opposites in tension with each other. And in order to hear the gospel text for today, you have to be able to hold opposites in tension with each other. If you take a look at that text from Luke, what does Jesus say? Blessed are you who are poor, for to you belongs all the riches of the kingdom of God. Poverty and riches. He goes on to say, blessed are you who are hungry, for you will be filled. Those who are starving and those who are filled. Blessed are you who will weep, because you will laugh. Weeping and laughter. And we go down through this text and we see that Jesus is asking those who follow him to hold those opposites in tension with each other. F. Scott Fitzgerald, when he talks about this ability to hold two opposing viewpoints in mind, says that the test of a first-rate intelligence is the ability to hold two opposing views in mind at the same time and to retain the ability to function. The Chinese character for the word crisis is also the Chinese character for the word opportunity. So Fitzgerald says, see things that are hopeless, this ability to see things that are hopeless, and yet be determined to make them otherwise. Now, I firmly believe in this notion of being able to hold opposites in our mind in tension with each other. What I want to challenge, however, is Fitzgerald's notion that everything that is hopeless is within our power, our human ability to change. For there are those things that we have no power over. Death is one of them. If you look at the list of saints that are listed in your bulletin today, you will see our oldest member listed, Gladys Mishler. What a rich and wonderful life she had, and what a joy to have a chance to get to know her and to be part of her life. But you will also see in that list the death of our youngest member, Oliver Heisey, who was just a few weeks old. We can, for those who have lived for a long time, find some level of comfort in talking about a rich and full and good life, and death doesn't seem to be as threatening at that moment. But when it comes to a child who's but a few weeks old, we are really reminded of how violent death is and what it does. And it leads us to ask, is there anything we can do to bring comfort and consolation? The answer is no. We can tell the stories. We can remember. We can look at the pictures. We can talk about those moments. But we all know there's only one thing that will bring us comfort. And the one thing that will bring us comfort is to have that person present with us again, to touch, to feel, to hold, to hear their voices, to look in their eyes, to have them tell us that we are loved just one more time. That's what would bring comfort. And that would only be possible if there were resurrection from the dead. We cannot, by our own ability, raise ourselves from the dead. But there is one who has died, who has been raised from the dead. And we believe that he is the one that brings resurrection and new life. So look at what our spiritual imaginations are asked to bring together: death and life, death and resurrection. And what Luke goes on to do then in this wonderful text is after giving us all of these tensions, he goes on to say, when you have that ability to bring life and death together, you have the capacity for reconciliation, to not respond violently to another. And then Jesus concludes by saying, if you then are engaged in the act of reconciliation, then you're willing to make sacrifices, even to giving up everything you have for someone else. We are a people, we are God's people, who hold together the tension of death and life. And we believe in holding that together, we have a new lens through which we can see the situations in which we find ourselves that appear to be hopeless but are filled with life and joy and hope. And that is what we as Christians bring to Wednesday morning of this coming week. Because Wednesday morning will come. As people who hold death and life in tension with each other and believe in the power of the resurrection, we have the capacity to challenge mindsets that see things as only being able to happen in one way. I am convinced that every person's house that has a front room just like mine, which is my study, should have two wingback chairs, one in front of each window, and a nice round wooden table in between with a lamp on that gives this wonderful warm glow out the windows at night because it's on a timer. That's like my mindset of what that perfect room looks like. And it is my prayer that all of you are just as enlightened as I am and do the exact same thing in your house. And if you don't, I'm really sorry for you that you don't get that. Now, we joke about those kind of superficial things, but don't we apply that to much more important topics, like what our country should be like? And we all have a mindset that we have applied to what our country should be like. And those who don't agree with us, well, there is obviously something wrong and they are the enemy. And those who agree with us, yes, we can celebrate this new sense of community that we have found with one another. And we end up violating, doing violence to anyone who disagrees with us. And isn't that at the heart of the political campaign right now? Is violating those who disagree. We have the capacity to see our nation in a different lens. A lens that says, how do we create a nation that is based on reconciliation and sacrifice for the well-being of others? We can do that because we hold death and life in tension with each other. As people of God who hold life and death in tension with each other, we can also challenge the notion that a person is either all good or all bad. we make those assumptions that the people that we like, they are all good, and the people we don't like, everything is wrong with them, and we're willing to cast that person aside. But I want you to consider the possibility that in each person there is good and there is bad. The Latin phrase that we put out in front of us on this All Saints Day is simul justus et peccator, simultaneously saint and sinner. It's wrapped up in all of who we are. And I think if we could take that understanding and apply it to our presidential candidates, maybe they would be humanized. For it is entirely possible, no matter how offended you might be with what Mr. Trump has done or allegedly has done, that there are places where he can show good leadership. We can allow room for both with him. And with Mrs. Clinton, we can understand that leadership is a very messy place to be. And leaders know a lot of things that those who are around them don't always know. And leaders need to make difficult decisions in wicked moments. And in making those decisions, they may not always make the right decision. And in making wrong decisions, people may die and things may go wrong. It doesn't make the decision acceptable, but it certainly helps us understand it. And so Mrs. Clinton, is entirely possible that she could be a good leader even if she has made significant errors in her leadership. We who hold life and death in tension with each other have the capacity to see every person through that lens. And brothers and sisters, I don't know about you, but it takes a lot of personal sacrifice for me to see someone that I don't like in a favorable light. But we can. As people of God who hold life and death in tension with each other, we also have a better understanding of this nature of our political system that exists out there. My son was listening to, I think it was ESPN, and they were talking about the Cleveland Indians losing the World Series this week and how it was sort of the opposite of how the Cleveland Cavaliers won the national championship earlier in the year, where they had come back down 3-1 and won the championship, and the Cubs did that to the Indians. And so the speculation by this one guy that I think was just absolutely crazy said, because the Cleveland Indians, which is baseball, has lost the World Series, there will be more pressure on LeBron James to do a better job next year. Well, he plays basketball, okay? So I'm thinking, okay, there's always going to be, isn't there, that one person that we hope will fix it all and make it better for us. And that's the myth we apply to our government. We'll find that one leader who will make it work. But we must understand the limitations of our government and what it can accomplish and what it can't accomplish. Our government operates by an authority of coercion. That is, that if you do something wrong, there is a consequence for it. We put that in law, and there's punishment for it. That's how we get people to do what we want them to do. It's that authority of coercion that people vie for and compete for. They want to get elected so they have that authority at their disposal. And the belief is that once you get that majority of people to vote for a solution, you then have this solution that is right. But the reality is you get a functional solution that simply has the support of a majority of people that may or may not be moral. There's a greater authority at play in this world than that of the authority of coercion. And we love the authority of coercion, the way to threaten others to get what we want. But for those who hold life and death in tension with each other, it's the authority of promise, the authority of hope, that there's something that breaks into this world, a power greater than us, a mind greater than ours, a heart much more loving and merciful than ours, that will transform things and set it all right so that all people might be honored for who they are. So perhaps those who have this life and death tension as Christians, perhaps we reduce our expectations of our government and what it can accomplish for us. And finally, those who hold in tension life and death, these are people who function in the public sector in a very new way. But Wednesday morning is coming. The world will not come to an end on Wednesday morning. It's not like the great Y2K scare where we believe that after January 31st, 1999, the world was going to come to an end. I know we thought that the water supply would dry up and electricity would go off and computers would shut down. My church, to prove that we did not believe in the power of Y2K, handed out our offering envelopes for the whole next year in December just to say, we do believe what will be around next year. Please keep giving throughout the next year. I wasn't overly concerned about it, but I have to admit that I did, when my wife and I went out to New Year's Eve party that night, take my garage door opener, our garage door off the garage door opener, just in case the electricity was gone whenever we got back after midnight. The world will not end on Wednesday, but it sure could feel like it had when we hear the acidic and vile and nasty ways that people are going to talk to each other. And so I want to challenge you to do something scandalous on Wednesday morning. I want you to dare to talk about reconciliation. To be totally scandalous and talk about the capacity for reconciliation. As Professor of Rhetoric Eric Dostander from South Africa wrote, when we have a belief that there are words which hold the potential to create life, then all things can become new. The words you use on Wednesday morning will shape either death or life. And it is my prayer that the words you use are words that bring about reconciliation and life. Amen.